11. Goodbye, England. It was the early evening that same day, the last day in England for the pilgrims. They had settled in their new quarters on board the Mayflower. The Lovelaces had spent a frustrating time below, setting up home once again in even more cramped conditions than before. At the earliest possible moment, they had gone on deck for welcome fresh air. Now they were pressed hard against the ship's side, looking back towards the shore. Pilgrim families were all around them. The deck was bustling with the activity of the sailors. All were shouts, whistles, and movement aboard. Unintelligible orders rang out. In quick response, barefooted men sprang cat-like into the rigging. Their arms pulled away with a will on the sheets. Their wriggling bodies started to ascend. And up they climbed. Justice thought they surely must lose their grip and fall from the rigging to be dashed upon the deck or plunged down into the sea. But no. Sure-footed, up and up they climbed, until those at the top seemed like tiny specks in the pale blue sky. Prudence had to shield her eyes against the sun as she lifted her face to stare in amazement at their lurchings in the topmost rigging. Her heart throbbed within her as she saw the men shuffling their precarious way out across the yards. As the children gazed upward, another mysterious strident order rang from the boatswain. Immediately, the windlass started to turn, squealing its resistance. The rope strained and began to pull at the anchor. All of a sudden, away she came. Away she came from her last muddy grip on England. The Mayflower was free. She started to drift in the swelling tide. At once another command was given, and the men in the rigging let go the sails. They fell, and coiling at a furious pace. The lines were fast around the cleats. Almost at once the wind filled the blowing canvas. The Mayflower lurched into the tide. Justice heard the familiar creaking of the board start up once again. He felt the deck move beneath his feet. "We're off," he said to Prudence. "We're off." The children were tense with excitement, their breath held within them and their arms and legs tight. Mr. Lovelace called them to order. "My children," he said, "come, take your long last look at England. You will never see her again." The children stood still. No words passed their lips. They listened to the deep, steady voice of their father. "That is the land of your birth, my children," he said, raising his arm and pointing back towards the shore. "You will never see it again." He paused. "God pity that land." He stopped, looked back to the shore, but said nothing. After what seemed an endless time of gazing back at the shore, the spell was broken. Mr. Lovelace slowly tapped the wooden rail with his fingers. He began to speak again. The children were just able to catch his low-toned words. He was thinking aloud. "May King James see sense," he said, keeping time with his drumming beat. "May King James see sense before it's too late." The children looked up quizzically into the face of their father. They saw tears in his eyes. They glistened in the evening sun as he turned his head away. Thin, watery lanes began to appear down his cheeks. Mr. Lovelace put his arm about his wife and held her close, with Justice and Prudence standing between them. The four of them hugged themselves against the side of the ship as the Mayflower dipped her bowsprit, picked up speed, and headed out into the open sea. They lingered over their last long look back at England. "We will never see her again. Never." They stayed there until their eyes strained to keep hold of their beloved homeland. It grew more and more difficult to distinguish the land from the greyness of the sea and the lowering sky. It was gone. They woke up with a kind of start. "That's it then," said Mr. Lovelace. "Come, my dears, we've left England. Left England for good. Let's go forward to the bows and look towards the west. That's where our home lies now. There lies the only home we shall have in this world. They made their way forward, picking their steps amidst the tangle of ladders, spars, barrels, and pumps that cluttered the deck. The prow was dipping into the ocean and slowly rising again. The keen wind blew about them. They felt the salt spray caress them. But this was no storm. The wind and sea were too gentle for that, far too gentle. Justice sensed the excitement tingling in his limbs. "We're off! This is it, then. At last we have turned our backs upon England and all its persecution." Mr. Lovelace seemed to echo the thoughts of his son. "King James said he would harry us out of the land. He has, too. It should never be necessary for us to hazard our lives like this to get freedom of worship." They raised their eyes to the west. They looked on the setting sun in the far distance. The sky was all a gentle, glorious red. "Fine weather tomorrow," said Mrs. Lovelace. "How do you know, Mother?" "Red sky at night. Shepherds and sailors delight, Prudence, my dear." "That proverb is very old," took up Mr. Lovelace. "Jesus said that the people knew it even in his day." The dying orb grew redder and larger. It was slowly but surely falling from the sky to sink beneath the waves. The sea and sky were all aflame. The great red ball began to disappear beneath the placid mill pond. A column of fire ran along the unruffled flat-topped ocean, up the bowsprit, to meet them in the ship. The spars, rigging, and sails were all set alight. Lovelace stood in the bows, gazing at the vanishing sun. They gazed and gazed without saying a word until it finally and silently disappeared beneath the waves. But the sun had not yet given up its hold of the day. It struggled to maintain its fiery grip over the sky. A hazy, dusky red glow filled the heavens. But gradually the creeping, approaching night put out the flames. The sun was extinguished. Night had commenced its reign. "Come, Martha," said Mr. Lovelace, gently pulling his wife around with one arm and clutching hold of Justice and Prudence with the other. "Come, my loves, let's go below. Let's get to our sleep. We're on our way to our new home this time." They turned towards the hatchway and strolled across the deck, slowly and steadily rising and falling in the gentle sea. They paused. They stood to listen to the unfamiliar songs of the sailors, making fast the sheets for the night. They saw other pilgrim families, much as their own, standing around in little knots by the side of the ship. They gently moved on. They reached the hatch that led below to their quarters. They stood at the top of the hatchway. They stopped and took a last look round. Then they set foot on the steps. The children went first. Mr. Lovelace took off his great black hat, lowered his head, and he, with his wife, disappeared from view.